from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, Pope Francis has released a long-awaited document on family life titled The Joy of Love. He says Catholics should look to their individual consciences more than the Vatican for negotiating the complexities of married life, and he calls for the Church to be more welcoming than judgmental, signaling a path for divorced and remarried Catholics to take communion. But once again, the pontiff closed the door on same-sex marriage and made no specific health exceptions to the church's ban on contraception. We'll dig into the document and its impact next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Titled The Joy of Love, this 256-page document culminates 2 years of consulting church hierarchy and ordinary Catholics in hopes of better understanding the problems families face today. In the document, Pope Francis acknowledges the pressures of poverty, drug abuse, violence, and migration, and calls on nations to support families through healthcare, education, and work. Both religious conservatives and Catholic reformists will find things to celebrate and be disappointed by in the document. It calls for priests to welcome single parents, gay people, unmarried straight couples living together, and opens the door for some divorced and remarried Catholics to take Holy Communion. But once again, it closes the door to same-sex marriage. We look at what role this document might play in the Catholic community here and globally that numbers more than a billion. Let me tell you who's joining us for the hour. Jimmy Akin is a columnist with the National Catholic Register. He blogs at jimmyakin.com and joins us from San Diego. Good morning, Jimmy Akin.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you. We also have Sally Vance Trembath. She is a Catholic theologian at Santa Clara University. Good morning, Sally Vance Trembath.
Good morning.
And also on the line is Michael Sean Winters. He's a columnist with the National Catholic Reporter. Good morning, Michael Sean Winters.
Good to be with you all.
And we have you from Maryland this morning. Is that right?
That's correct.
Well, I wanted to start with you, if I could, and it was a long document, but I want you to summarize for us, if you could, the overall tone.
I think the most important change, and it really is a change, is that Pope Francis is challenging the Church to do more than simply repeat the catechism and harangue those who fall short. He's not changing the rules. I know some of my more liberal friends were hoping he was going to change this rule or change that rule. I think what he's really inviting the Church is to take a step back and say, this is about something deeper than a checklist of rules. It's about how God is operative in people's life. And I think that what he's inviting, especially the clergy, to is to accompany people and find out how God is already active in their lives and help lead them and form their conscience. There's a wonderful line there that, you know, the pastor forms the conscience. He doesn't replace it. And for too many pastors, I think, give the impression that your job in forming your conscience is to do what we tell you to do. And I think the Pope has a much more sophisticated pastoral approach to that. So that's the overarching theme is that the Church accompanies marriages, families, people in difficult situations, irregular situations. It doesn't start by hurling down anathemas at them.
And one of the things, the specifics that is making headlines is the fact that he seems to be opening the door for some divorced and remarried Catholics to take Holy Communion. Can you explain how he's doing that?
Basically, in calling for discernment, he's very clear that it's not his job as the Pope or the priest's job to tell people about the circumstances of their lives. They know the circumstances of their lives. The job of the Church is to hold out the ideal, what we're called to in Jesus Christ, and to help them get there and see how that applies in the circumstances of their life. But there's a great respect. I think, you know, one of the words that comes back to me reading this text is it's very adult. There were people who said, oh, you know, he's going to sow confusion and, you know, we have to be very clear in our teaching. And he seems not very worried about that. He actually confronts that in paragraph 308 and says, there are those who want a more rigid approach so as to avoid confusion. But he actually thinks this is wrong and is inviting people really to appreciate what he calls the wonderfully complicated lives, to recognize that God's grace is available in the imperfections of life, not just in a kind of upper middle class sensibility heavily rooted on pelvic theology that, you know, I conform. It's about deeper than, it's something deeper than conformity.
Sally Manstrom-Math, before I get into more specifics, could I get your reaction to the document?
I'm excited about it because it continues the pattern that Pope Francis has been using, which is he's reinventing the papacy. He's reinventing, or actually returning to, a way of being the pope that is more similar to the first 1,000 years of the church than to the last 1,000 years of the church, which is he has a ministry of unity. He's there to unify the bishops and to proclaim the gospel. And so in doing that, he's shifting a lot of his energy to, okay, local bishop, you are the wise pastor in the local church. And he's listening to the local bishops. And in terms of your question about the overarching, what did the document do, especially with divorced and remarried Catholics coming back to being welcomed to communion, he's throwing that back to the local church and saying, stop looking to the Vatican bureaucracy to formulate rules and regulations that you implement, but you bishops be creative and listen and work in dialogue with your priests and form your seminarians. So I was excited about, in general, to answer your question, I was excited that, thank goodness, he continues to follow the pattern he's done in his earlier works and in his homilies, and he's continuing to rebuild the church.
Jimmy Akin with the National Catholic Register, do you have the same reaction as Sally Manstrom-Math, that he's really reinventing the church and in some ways also returning to the way it functioned, you know, in its first 1,000 years?
Yeah, I think that Amoris Laetitiae is an important contribution, and it's a great expression of pastoral concern for married couples and for families in general in today's world and all the different challenges that they have to face. It's really an expression of pastoral outreach, but I think Sally and Michael have both kind of oversold the newness of it. It really doesn't have a lot new to say. It's simply trying to communicate the concern the church has always had. Talking about reinventing the papacy is a little excessive. I mean, if you read the document and if you look at the footnotes, for example, it's clear that this is in continuity with previous papacies. I mean, it constantly is quoting not only Pope Francis himself, but St. John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI and other popes and theologians like Thomas Aquinas. Similarly, I think there's a risk of overplaying differences on the tonal front. I mean, Michael was talking about popes previously expecting people to harangue parishioners or throw down anathemas at them, and none of that happens in the Catholic Church. I mean, anathemas haven't been used in over 100 years, so recent popes have adopted the same kind of positive tone of outreach that Pope Francis has. He's doing it in a particularly successful way in the modern media, but in terms of the basic message of, we want to be open to everybody, we want to be able to reach out to everyone and help them grow closer to God, that's something that's been a recurring theme of repeated papacies.
But is he not increasing local control when he says that, you know, that local priests can seek better solutions suited to the communities, their traditions, cultural sensitivities? Jimmy Akin?
There's some play around the edges, but in terms of the fundamental thing that he said regarding giving communion to the divorced and civilly remarried in certain circumstances, he actually didn't say anything new there. I mean, that's exactly what you would have read in a moral theology manual from the 1930s.
Michael Sean Winters, it's true. He didn't say, yes, go ahead. That can be done in terms of giving communion to divorced Catholics.
Well, I would contrast two things. So Pope John Paul II in Familiaris Consortio, which was also the product of a synod in 1981, in paragraph 84, he says, these people, those who are divorced and remarried, if they were admitted to the Eucharist, the faithful will be led into error and confusion regarding the Church's teaching about the indissolubility of marriage, and says that they cannot. Compare that to the Holy Father, Pope Francis, who says, I understand that those who prefer a more rigorous pastoral care, which leaves no room for confusion, but I sincerely believe that Jesus wants a Church attentive to the goodness which the Holy Spirit sows in the midst of human weakness. A mother who, while clearly expressing her objective teaching, always does what good she can, even if in the process her shoes get soiled by the mud of the street. So it may be true that, you know, again, the rules are not changing, but the entire approach is changing. Something bigger than a change of rules is happening here. And I think this is what's important when you read the text as a whole. The relationship of the pastor, of the church, to the individual family, especially to broken families, there's an invitation there that simply was not present for the last 35 years. And this issue came up in the press conference of the Vatican this morning, and they said, you know, does Familius Consortio 84 still hold? And Cardinal Schoenborn, who was doing the presentation of the document, said, this is a development of doctrine. Of course, it's in continuity. The church doesn't, you know, change on a dime ever. But there is clearly a development of doctrine, and I don't think that we can deny that.
And Sally Vance Trembath, is that what he means when he's talking about the individual consciences? Is that sort of the part of this that really seems to speak to a shift in approach?
Yes, and I think I'm with especially Mr. Akin about the continuity with the teaching of the church. That's certainly clear. But the shift to reinvigorate the rich and longstanding view of the internal decision, discernment process that individual Christians make, we have a robust thinking about the conscience that goes back centuries. But Pope Francis is shifting the emphasis on paying attention to your experience, paying attention to other voices. Again, once again, I'm excited that he's quoting Martin Luther King. He does quote the previous popes, but he also quotes, you know, a film, Babette's Feast. So he's looking at the wisdom of the wider culture and invigorating the, if you will, the connective tissue between the wider culture and the deep Catholic teaching. And with more emphasis on the individual's discernment process rather than, okay, how do I implement or how do I line myself up with these rules and regulations? Not to say that the rules and regulations go anywhere. My favorite line from the text is when Pope Francis quotes himself talking at a homily of new cardinals, where he says, the Catholic Church is constantly casting off and reinstating teaching. That is just genius in terms of expressing what the Catholic Church does, is that, you know, we have these teachings that are robust and they endure and they fit the culture of Western European society. But, you know, the church is a global church now, and we have to adjust to a very diverse and pluriform and a mosaic is the language that the Pope uses. So you have to reinvent or reinvigorate your teaching. You don't throw it all out, but, you know, old paradigms die hard, but you always bring some of the old paradigm into the new one, but you're crafting a new one. And I will stand on my first statement. He is trying to truly implement a global Catholic Church, not a European medieval church transplanted globally, but the wisdom of the ancient church growing in the new global situation.
So then how do you see this playing out locally? So if people are consulting more their individual conscience in terms of how they want to, you know, function as a Catholic, what changes could be seen locally, Sally Vance Trembath?
Well, if we take him seriously, he's saying to the bishops and the local pastors, be creative. And he even says, be creative about ecclesial ceremonies, you know, to think about ways. And in particular, for he moves into this, and so I'm expanding on it. But he ponders, okay, you have a second marriage that is, you know, the bones of family life are established, and this second marriage has children, and you want those people to be a part of the church. What kinds of liturgical celebrations could you have short of changing the church's teaching on, you know, getting a new sacramental marriage? But be creative about that. A renewal of, he doesn't say this, but you can, so that now you can say to the bishop and the local priests, let's be creative. Could you have a renewal of mom and dad's vows when you're celebrating confirmation? Could you, what happens around First Communion of these children who now are in the bones of a family that's a second marriage, that's a life-giving good family? And as he says, you know, we don't stand towards that as though it's a flawed family, we say to ourselves, well, how are we going to think about this new family in this new situation?
Jimmy Akin, do you see this? Do you see changes like this playing out as a result of this document?
Well, I think that I hate to say it, but I think that Sally has somewhat missed the Pope's point, because one of the things that he's very clear on, and he says it over and over again, is that the church must continue to propose God's understanding of marriage. We can't simply make people comfortable where they're at. We need to help them go forward and grow closer to God and to better implement God's will in their lives, because that's what's ultimately going to make them happy, not just in this world, but in the next one as well. And so he talks explicitly. I mean, Sally kind of hedged, saying, well, let's see what we could do about being creative without going and having people get sacramentally married. But the Pope says that the goal is the opposite, that if someone is in one of these situations that doesn't implement the true nature of marriage, that they should, that should be the goal, that they should seek to grow closer to God, and they should ultimately get sacramentally married if that's at all possible. And so his goal is not to make people comfortable where they're at, but to challenge people and to help them grow in grace and in holiness in their lives and in happiness as well.
Again, Jimmy Akin is a columnist with the National Catholic Register. We're also joined by Sally Vance Trembath. She's a Catholic theologian at Santa Clara University. And Michael Sean Winters is a columnist with the National Catholic Reporter. Michael Sean Winters, isn't this basically the way Pope Francis works? I mean, his words are open to interpretation from both sides, so that, say, liberals or Catholic reformists can interpret it one way, conservatives interpret it another way. Are there risks to taking this middle of the road, or I don't know if middle of the road is the right way to describe it, but just sort of this open to interpretation approach?
Well, I think it's somewhat novel, because I think he wants us to be, again, I go back to the word adult. I don't think he's afraid of disagreement. Even when you look back, this document is the outcome of two synods, where he encouraged people to speak forthrightly and share their differences of opinion, which were forcefully done in ways that we had never seen before. I mean, I actually attended.
And just to explain to our listeners really quick, if you wouldn't mind, Michael Sean Winters, what a synod is.
A synod is a gathering of bishops every few years. They last for usually about 3 weeks, and he had two synods in preparation. And this document relies heavily on the final documents from those two synods. But it was an engagement, a chance for the Pope to listen to the bishops and have them engage each other, talking about these things, as Sally pointed out. You know, the situation of the church in Africa, and this is addressed in his text, is very different from the situation in the United States or Western Europe. They don't have nuclear families. They still have held on to this idea of extended family. When you marry in Africa, it's the marriage of two families, not just two individuals. And that's a very rich and beautiful thing to be preserved. But I think, you know, we have to go back to these synods. And you know, one of the real challenges that was thrown at the Pope is that, oh, you know, if we change anything on the divorced and remarried or outreach to gays, we're just capitulating to the culture. We're watering down the gospel. That was a phrase. And he confronts this in paragraph 311. He writes, "At times we find it hard to make room for God's unconditional love in our pastoral activity. We put so many conditions on mercy that we empty it of its concrete meaning and real significance. That is the worst way of watering down the gospel." So he takes this charge that has been leveled at him and throws it back at the people who said he was watering down the gospel. And I think this is the key theme of this pontificate of this year is mercy, 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 that this is the core of the gospel. Jesus does not anywhere in the gospels say, you know, you can't use contraception, and if you're divorced and remarried, you have to do this. But he does constantly talk and bring mercy to the people with whom he interacts. And I think Francis is calling us to get back to that core gospel. And if the canons of the church and the theology of the church and the pastoral practice are in the way, then we have to reevaluate those practices and those canons and those and that theology, because we've obscured mercy. That our faith has been reduced to a kind of moralism that misses the actual gospel. And I think that's the real core of this teaching, and it is quite different.
Well, Michael Sean Winters, can you talk a little bit about how Pope Francis treated same-sex marriage in this document?
Same-sex marriage is not, our Catholic view of marriage is about openness to children. It's about a man and a woman. There's not, I cannot, in my wildest imaginations, get to a point where I can never conceive of a same-sex marriage being performed in a Catholic church. That said, he does, really, in two paragraphs, 250 and 251, go out of his way to avoid any sense of unjust discrimination. There are things that we can't do. And that is what it is. And he also at another point spoke about how all of us in the church have to remember the good of the church first, not our own private agendas. And I thought that was a very important point. Sometimes some of my gay activist friends are, I think, leading with a slightly myopic sense of concern for the church. And there are other issues that any pope, but also the church as a whole, has to consider. How will a given decision affect, you know, our communion together or our possibility of reunion, say, with the Orthodox churches? You see this playing out in the Episcopal churches, right? They've broken in two over the issue of same-sex issues. Catholics, we don't do that. I mean, the priority is always the unity of the church. So I think there was an openness there. I saw a statement from a gay activist today, a Catholic activist, who was very disappointed with this. I was not. I didn't expect there to be much groundbreaking on this. It was much more on the divorced and remarried situation.
Sally Van Strombath, he says, Pope Francis, there are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family. Has he closed the door? I mean, that's how it feels to a lot of folks who are interpreting this and potentially close the door at least during his term.
Well, surely he's consistent with the catechism, but let me just at least open the door a little bit. So yes, I agree, and it's pretty clear that he himself, in this particular teaching, he's not changing the teaching. But just I'd like to point out a couple of things. You know, how does the Catholic Church do that? What's the reasoning there? The reasoning that he says is there's an anthropological basis for marriage, right? That it's rooted in the anthropology. Well, I would say to that, you know, our humanity, it does start in our bodies, but it doesn't end there. And the entire human community is looking at this larger question of what is the relationship between the physical beings that we are and how we display ourselves as embodied spirits, because that's the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's the great religious traditions say that we're not simply animals that have higher order reasoning, but we're embodied spirits. So we're going to always struggle with look to the body to figure out what the spirit is going to do. And this is a place where the Catholic Church, the moral reasoning of the Catholic Church, overly physicalizes sexuality. We consistently overly physicalize the way we think about that expression. And it's going to be a long time before we stop doing that overly physicalizing, but at least I think we need to recognize it. The Pope continues in that same pattern.
Again, we're talking with Sally Vance Trembath, the Catholic theologian at Santa Clara University, Jimmy Akin with the National Catholic Register, and Michael Sean Winters, a columnist with the National Catholic Reporter, about Pope Francis's long-awaited document on marriage and family. When we get back after the break, we'll take your calls and thoughts on his speech. This is Forum. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're talking about Pope Francis's document on marriage and family that was released today. Earlier I said speech. Excuse me for that. We're talking about the impact it could have and the fact that it calls for the church to change its tone to be less judgmental and more welcoming. What's your reaction to what this document has to say? Does this affect you in any way? Or what kinds of experiences have you had with the Catholic Church, perhaps trying to get an annulment or, you know, in terms of your relationship to Holy Communion? Give us a call with your questions or comments at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. Jimmy Akin, one of the things that I wanted to talk with you about was, you know, San Francisco's Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione. He's been viewed as somewhat of an Orthodox counterpoint to Francis in terms of what some have described his more inclusive reformism. Do you think that this speech, this document, but do you think that this will change the way Salvatore Cordiglione does practices here in the Bay Area?
Well, I would hesitate to speak for another person, but I would suspect that Archbishop Cordiglione would resist a characterization of him as being opposed to Pope Francis. I don't think he views it that way. Obviously, people have different styles, and that's perfectly legitimate. But I think that he's in continuity with Pope Francis on a wide range of points, including on the subject of homosexuality. One of the things that Michael talked about before the break was he quoted a passage from the new document where the Pope says that there should be no unjust discrimination against people with same-sex attraction. Well, you know where that quote comes from. It's from a document that was released by Pope Benedict during the reign of John Paul II. So Francis is not doing anything new here. He's simply continuing the same theme of outreach. The church isn't judgmental. The church doesn't condemn people. The church is looking for ways to reach out to people where they're at and then help them grow from there and walk with God and grow closer to God. And that applies to people with same-sex attraction, just like it applies to everybody else. So I think that Archbishop Cordiglione would point all that out as well.
Well, one of the things, though, that this document talks about is trying to be more sensitive to the needs and the views and the cultural norms of the community that you are, you know, leading. And if he is so in line with that, then, why, say, a year or so ago, there was a full page ad in the Chronicle asking for his removal, especially around his, morality clauses for teachers that he had instituted, as well as he was a key force behind the state's 2008 ban on same-sex marriage, which was, of course, something here that was widely opposed. Would this not have any influence whatsoever in terms of...
Let me ask you a question. Was that any different than the line that Pope Francis just took in this document? Again, there's an attempt frequently on the part of commentators and people in the news media to try to spin these different figures and to try to kind of classify them politically as left or right, liberal or conservative, and so forth. But if you look at the substance, you find that people like Archbishop Cordiglione and Pope Francis are in agreement on the substance. They may have different personal styles, but style is not the same thing as substance, and it's a mistake to try to say, oh, Archbishop Cordiglione is some kind of evil anti-homosexual ogre, but Pope Francis is light and embracing. The fact is they both want to reach out to everybody, regardless of what particular temptations they may face, and help them grow and be happy. That's the goal for both of them. And they both recognize that there is a difference between the kind of union that a man and a woman can have, as illustrated by the fact it can produce children, and the kind of union that two people of the same sex can have. They're just not the same on the level of reality.
Sally Vance Trembeth, I see you shaking your head.
Well, I certainly the local archbishop is in dialogue and in line with Pope Francis, so I don't see a big disconnect. But I do think it's helpful to pull back from the document and get out of the weeds. One of the things that we Catholics love to do is get into the weeds of documents, and we have to also remember that there's the weeds, but there's also the larger arc of the document. And in number three, Pope Francis says very clearly, you know what? Not all discussions of doctrinal, moral, or pastoral issues need to be settled by the magisterium. So that's another code, another Catholic code for saying, okay, how does teaching function in the church? And it certainly functions at these broad principles. And I agree with Mr. Aiken that he's not changing the way that the Catholic Church roots married love in the physicality that is tied to procreation. But our developmental understanding of human persons has grown in the 20th century, and we are by no means to the end of the conversation about what is the meaning of human sexual expression. That's a challenging meaning for everybody, and it no longer makes any sense to simply tie it to procreation. I'm the child of a widowed mother, and when I was in the Catholic Church early, I was seen as coming from a broken home. No, I lived in the marriage of my father and mother, but that marriage wasn't present, and I didn't see it expressed in hugs and sexuality. So I'm not going to be willing to say that sexuality, what happens in the intimacy that begins in bodily sexual expression, we have to expand our understanding of that, which and there is where we need to do what Pope Francis does. We need to listen to the wider community, to married people, to physicians, to psychologists.
Well, let's listen to our wider community. Let's go to Kevin in Oakland. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Good. Just a brief. The problem with Archbishop Corleone's statements last year is that they weren't rooted in mercy. That was a divisive, angry document. And anybody who read it, anybody who looked at it, that was the problem with it. So I'm just going to say that as a digression. My main point was at the parish level, for generations, the lived experience of Catholics has been that divorced Catholics are taking communion, same-sex marriages are blessed by priests, not in the church, but perhaps in the people's homes. Women who have abortions are being forgiven and taking communion. You go to all the University of Chicago studies on where Catholics live their faith, and it's not in these doctrines that are being discussed today. It's a nice conversation to have. It's at the pastoral level where they're dealing with priests who understand the real experience of the parishioner. The woman who's being beaten by her husband and gets divorced is not being refused communion today. Right now,
and wouldn't have been.
And the person whose marriage dissolves because there's differences in the marriage is not being refused communion. The people who were priests who left the church, who are not supposed to give communion as ministers, who are not supposed to read the readings during the Mass, are doing so. I mean, this is the lived experience of Catholics.
Kevin, thanks for that point. I could hear Jimmy Akin wanting to weigh in. Jimmy Akin?
Yeah, I wanted to make a point that the church has always understood that there are that just because you get divorced doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. I mean, even when a marriage breaks down because one spouse, you know, let's say, decides he wants to commit adultery and goes off and shacks up with someone else, that doesn't mean the abandoned wife has done anything wrong. And so even decades and decades ago, women who had been abandoned in that situation or men would have been able to receive communion. The fact that someone's been divorced does not mean that they're at fault. The issue regarding communion doesn't have to do simply with divorce. It's more complex than that.
But what do you think more broadly about the fact that what he's saying is that, you know, the way that Catholics live, I mean, there have been statistics that, you know, 80% use contraception, that more than half believe that abortion should be legal, that it's very different than, say, what's being discussed at, you know, the Vatican.
I would say that that's a reflection of the fact that not everyone is fully informed about their faith. Not everyone is committed as they should be. And that's nothing new in human experience. There's always been a gap between where people should be and where they are. That's simply a product of original sin that's been with the human race ever since the beginning. And it's going to be with us for the rest of this age. So the difference between where we're at and where we should be is nothing new.
So Michael Schonwinder, is really just a lack of information for people who may be living in ways that are against the doctrine?
I think, you know, the problem with Jimmy's analysis would be, and this would tie in with what the caller mentioned about Archbishop Corleone's, you know, morality clauses for those teachers' contracts, was there was this real focus on sexual issues and not on, you know, somebody may be in a same-sex relationship, but be a wonderful human being, and you may have somebody that's in a perfectly valid Catholic heterosexual marriage, but they're gambling or they're beating the kids or something. You know, I mean, this is the problem, which is it was this the sense in those morality clauses was you could do whatever you wanted, but boy, if you signed a petition in favor of same-sex marriage, you were going to hell. And I think this is different.
Oh, he did not say
Pope Francis
that.
Is trying to get us. Well, Pope Francis is trying to get us away from that. And Jimmy, you correctly pointed out that the Holy Father, when he talked about unjust discrimination against gays and lesbians, was quoting a document that was written by then-Cardinal Ratzinger, later Pope Benedict XVI, signed by John Paul II. But there it was kind of a grace note, because that was the document that talked about, you know, homosexuality was an intrinsically disordered condition. And he left all that out this time. So again, this is, it's not that there's no continuity, but to deny that the emphasis has changed, I think is a kind of willful misreading of the document.
Well, there's been an interesting conversation, Sally Vance Trembath, about what was left out of the document, you know, with regard to, say, you know, the emphasis from Pope John Paul's earlier document on the family and divorce, and also shifting gears a little bit, concerns about what was left out with regard to contraception. We have a listener, Keith, who writes, if you have a belief, a doctrine, keep it. Don't keep softening it just to keep your brand fresh. This is just about making more Catholics. If you want the Pope to do something important, you should deal with allowing contraception. On this issue of contraception, you know, some were disappointed that this carved out no specific health exceptions to the church's ban on contraception. But then I remember earlier there was a suggestion from the Pope that contraceptives could be used to prevent the spread of the Zika virus. Where do you think he stands on this?
Well, I think in this document, at least, he runs home to the traditional teaching of what is the relationship between the body and the spirit, and that you look to the body to give you the direction for the spirit. That is a robust way. It's the natural law theory, and that's a robust way of thinking about how we are as human persons. And it's elegant and it's wonderful and it worked for centuries. We need to grow out of that, however, because our understanding of the human person is growing and developing. Now, it's going to take a long time to do, but that natural law theory is too shrunken to help us deal with things. And I'm glad that you asked about contraception, or just the reproductive issues. It's a great mystery. What is the relationship between sexual expression and the procreation of children? And let's not come at it from the point of view of abortion or those kinds of things, but just reproductive technology. One of the things that we've learned is that we had this view that, well, if you can't have a baby physiologically, you need a little help with some injections or some reproductive technology, we would have said no to that, right? Because that's disconnecting God's will. But then we've had theologians reflecting on this for several decades who've said, well, wait a minute, maybe going to see a reproductive physician is an act of love. Maybe we need to expand the relationship or massage the relationship between, if you will, body parts and human intimacy. And Pope Francis he's not left behind the natural law theory, but in the great history of the Catholic intellectual tradition, we do eventually, the Catholic Church eventually says, okay, what's the wider wisdom of the intellectual community saying? And we're going to develop our teaching in light of that. We're not there yet, but we are definitely, that's the pattern of Catholicism, is that the wider intellectual tradition is also discloses God's will, not just the inside baseball of the Catholic Church.
Well, Michael writes, it's odd that you talk to a guy who doesn't have sex and doesn't have a relationship with a woman about sex and marriage. That's something that I've heard before in other shows. Peter in San Francisco, go ahead.
Yeah, I've been married to the same woman for 36 years, and I hope gay people have the same happiness that I've had. And I think especially gays with children deserve to be married and, you know, have the legal protections. And, you know, I just think it's, you know, the whole thing is hypocritical and it's a bunch of hooey.
The whole thing meaning the church?
Oh, you know, this whole edict or whatever it is from the Pope, that, you know, I just think it's, you know, all of it's hypocritical.
Well, Peter, thanks for sharing your thoughts. And if you'd like to join the conversation again, that number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on our website, Facebook, or tweet us at KQED Forum. Michael Sean Winters, one of the things that our online commenter, the point that he made earlier was also that this is about getting more Catholics. I wonder if you could just help us understand the issues that the Catholic Church is facing in terms of, are they losing people, right? Have people walked away from the church over the past, you know, decade or so? And under Francis, who is very popular, is there a substantive return?
You know, I wouldn't want to reduce this to, you know, a PR exercise. I don't think that's at all what's going on here. Obviously, the church has been in decline in certain areas of the United States, in Western Europe, and it can depend even in the United States very much on which region. Obviously, the church is growing, you know, hugely in the Southwest and the West, mostly because of Latino immigration in California, also Filipino immigration. So we're bringing in, you know, lots of new Catholics, mostly through immigration. I don't think we can overstate, I don't think it's possible to overstate the degree to which the clergy sex abuse crisis cost us the fidelity and loyalty of many, many Catholics in this country and in other countries. But I don't think the Pope this document is not, you know, trying to get more members, except in this sense, where he wants to make sure that the gospel message of God's, you know, hunting us down because he loves us so much, that's what we need to be leading with. And for too long, we've been leading with the laws, the rules, even the referring to a bishop as orthodox. You know, I know a lot of bishops and they disagree with each other but they're all orthodox. I mean, that's, I hate it when they say, oh, this guy's orthodox. Well, guess what? They all are. And the Pope really addresses this dynamic in 304. He said, it is reductive simply to consider whether or not an individual's actions correspond to a general law or rule, because that is not enough to discern and ensure full fidelity to God in the concrete life of a human being. And for too long, especially on issues like the debate over same-sex marriage and these kinds of things, it has been precisely this that has been thrown at people's feet. The Pope says in this document, stop using the teaching of the church and throwing it at people like it was a stone at the woman, you know, mm-hmm. accused of adultery. And this has happened. To say, oh, there's great continuity, yes. But there are bishops in this United States who have hurled the teachings of the church at other people to marginalize them, not to say your very incompleteness is an invitation to God's grace, and we're going to help you discern what God is calling you to in the circumstances of your life. And that's a total Weltanschauung shift that this Pope is asking us to undertake.
Sally Van Strumeth, what role do you think Pope Francis's popularity plays in the impact of this text and the impact of the things that Michael Sean Winters is pointing out?
He's not embarrassing. I think that's the first thing. I mean, I teach undergraduates and I spend time around young people. And there are ways in which when Catholic magisterial figures or Catholic leaders speak, you can feel embarrassed because it will be either incoherent or rigid or not in dialogue with modern times. So the first thing he does is he makes you proud to be a Catholic because he treats people with respect. He starts with the gospel and he is a thinker. And that's, for me, that's been one of the most wonderful things about the Pope. And I'm not saying that Pope Benedict and Pope John Paul II and Pope, for that matter, Pope Paul VI, you know, the previous popes weren't thinkers. But there has been a growing disconnect between the development of new intellectual or new conceptual ideas and what Catholics say, in particular, since we're talking about this category, just the category of intimacy. Human intimacy is very complicated. And to think how we talk about the meaning of the sex drive, we have learned so much about that in the last century that doesn't fit into those narrow categories of look to the body to determine how it works. So Catholics started to look anti-intellectual. And then I'm with Michael Sean that, you know, we're also living in the worst crisis, the worst institutional crisis in the Catholic Church since the Reformation, which is where we had the institutional church protecting itself rather than proclaiming the gospel. And that did tremendous damage, and it made you feel, could make you feel uncomfortable or embarrassed to be a Catholic. And now you have Pope Francis speaking openly about the damage, about the crisis, and you have him speaking in the way that is the thing that I just find so lovable about the Catholic Church, which is that there is a relationship between the human mind at work and how we discover God. They're not antithetical. And many undergrads come to, you know, this discourse thinking, well, you know, the Catholics are anti-intellectual. No, we have this great intellectual tradition that I'm glad to see him reinvigorating. And I do think he's reinvigorating it.
Well, Matt writes, while growing up...
Just one thing there.
Jimmy Akin?
On the sex abuse crisis, we have to give credit to Pope Benedict, who really got the ball rolling first as Cardinal Ratzinger at the CDF and then as Pope Benedict on confronting this. John Paul II was a disaster on this issue. At the highest level, pedophiles were protected, like Father Maciel. But Benedict really deserves a great deal of credit for confronting the sex abuse crisis, putting procedures in place to defrock priests who had done this. So I want to give him a shout out on that. I think he doesn't get enough credit for that. And even Pope Francis said this on the plane back from Mexico, that he said, you know, Ratzinger doesn't get enough credit for this.
Well, Jimmy Akin, thanks for that. Matt writes, while growing up... Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Michael. Sean Winters, thanks for saying that. Appreciate it. Matt writes, while growing up Catholic, my parents were never allowed to take communion because my brother and I were born out of wedlock and my dad had been remarried. This always made me feel like the church never really welcomed my family, and as a result, I became deeply against organized religion. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Pope can now just change the rules just goes to show how, quote, man-made the institution of the church is and has relatively little to do with spirituality and morality. Rick writes, does the Pope's encouragement for bishops to be less judgmental and more inclusive also apply to all of the church hierarchy, like cardinals, priests, monks, nuns, and even Catholic laypersons? Jimmy Akin, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I would say that, again, there's a kind of a verbal tick in a lot of the way the media presents this. It's not that the church, the Pope is saying, don't be judgmental, don't be evaluating these situations. The church has always wanted to express compassion. Now, there have been times, absolutely, where it's been expressed imperfectly, like in the comment from one of the readers that you mentioned. But the church, despite its flaws, because after all, the church is made up of sinners. That's who it's for. I mean, we're all sinners, and we all need God's mercy. The church is always wanting to reach out to people, and that's true not just in the era of Pope Francis. It's true in the past. It's true in the future. And so for those situations where there have been failures, the church apologizes. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, John Paul II was very big on apologizing. He made a major apology before the year 2000 for all of the sins committed by Catholics in the past 2,000 years. And so we're aware of our sins, we're aware of our own needs for God's mercy, and we're simply trying to do what we can to help other people grow closer to God as well. And so for anything that's been done wrong, the church apologizes, but please don't let that stand in the way of having a relationship with God and with growing in His grace.
Becky in Pennsylvania. Hi, Becky.
Hello. It's interesting, the documents coming out at the same time in the United States, some of the states are issuing these discrimination laws against religious freedom. But my main question is, how will this document, do you think, affect employers within the United States that are Catholic employers that are terminating employees for being a married gay?
Thanks, Becky. Sally Van Strandbath, do you want to take that?
Well, that's a great question. I hope that most employers are prudent and say to themselves, you know, we're going to follow the law, because there shouldn't be a disconnect between Catholic practice and following the law. And if you get rigid about it and say, oh, we're going to have a litmus test, which some bishops have done, I'm not going to be... timid about that because it's true. But if you reduce it to a litmus test, you're not being a prudential Catholic institution. You do not have to do that. And Catholics who want to engage the wider culture, our tradition follows the law. There are times when we ask the law to grow, but we have an openness to that, and there are very prudential ways to do that. But I'm with you that there are some places that use Catholic teaching as a way to push back against the wider culture, and that's mistaken.
Geraldine in Berkeley. Hi, Geraldine.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I know a lot of young people who are Catholic or formerly Catholic trying to reconcile their progressive beliefs with the Church's beliefs, and statements like this one from the Pope are very appealing for that reason because it makes it feel like it's easier to do that. But I think young people, especially and young Catholics, in doing that overlook how damaging a lot of the Church doctrine is, when instead they could be, you know, really getting behind gay people and women and women's health. So I think it's misleading in a lot of ways, and it often feels like a publicity campaign from the new Pope.
Well, thanks, Geraldine, for your thoughts. Michael Shawn Winters, is there anything you want to say about the timing of this, about the timing of this document?
No, just I think it was fortuitous. It came out in the Jubilee of Mercy this year that the Pope has invited us to really reflect on God's mercy in our scriptures and in our theology and in our lives, most especially. And it actually came out, I thought, pretty quickly, given that the Synod was in October. He had to compile a lot of documents, reflect on this, and then produce this really long document. But it's wonderful, and I think there are just some passages there. You can tell this man is has the heart of a parish priest, and that's a wonderful thing. And as Sally mentioned, he's also a very profound thinker. I mean, he's no... there's nothing slipshod about his theology, but I think that what he brings to this is an experience. You know, when he talks about the socioeconomic factors and the role they play on families, this is a guy who has the smell of the sheep.
All right. Well, Michael Shawn Winters, a columnist for the National Catholic Reporter, Sally Vance Trembath, a Catholic theologian at Santa Clara University, and Jimmy Akin, a columnist for the National Catholic Register. Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
And thank you to our listeners for weighing in. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.